Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live over our satellite-based radio station, an antenna circling the globe to provide the great news of Eastern Airlines to listeners all around the world, and that's 40 countries at this point. At that time again, folks, the radio voice of Eastern Airlines is on the air, just as we have over the past 235 broadcasts. We thank you for listening in. This is the place you can come to each week to talk and listen to the wonderful men and women known as the Eastern Family, sharing their thoughts and memories of the best days of their lives. Our broadcast about Eastern years as early as 1928, from Hikarian to Eastern, and even the new Eastern Airlines group. We hope you'll be part of our show and participate. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is to call us at 213-816-1611, and it will put you on Neil Producer's board, telling us what's on your mind or adding to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil has opened your telephone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press the number one button on your telephone's keypad to join in. For those who cannot listen in on a computer, you can still hear and participate by just calling the number you heard. Also, keep in mind that your telephone or microphone picks up any noises that might be in the background, so make sure you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Just as a reminder, for those who wanting to listen to our show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can connect by going to www.ealradioshow.com. Or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.REPA, that's R-E-P-A, online.com. That's the site of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone number for the show again. It's 213-816-1611. Also, as a reminder, at the end of each of our shows, we usually have time remaining for Eastern music, or music we grew up with while working at Eastern. At the at each end of the broadcast, we will feature a different recording artist that we all will recognize, or a series of recordings selected by our producer. We hope you'll stick around after the sign-off music has been played for this part of the EAL radio show. Steve.
Neil, they pulled the chocks, and I think it's time now for us to crank up that R2800, and let's get the show rolling down the runway.
Yes, sir, Captain. Here we go. Clear prop.
Roll. Clear prop.
Clear.
the good old days. Sometimes it feels like this world's gone crazy. Grandpa, take me back to yesterday, when the line between right and wrong didn't seem so hazy. Lovers really fall in love to stay, stand beside each other, come what may. Promise really something people can, not just something they would say. Families really bow their heads to pray. Daddy's really never go away. Oh, oh, Grandpa, tell me about the good old
performs his duty. Even with all of this division of authority into above-named component departments, there are still many small chores which have been left undone, and for this reason, and none other, there has been created in the aviation industry a demand for the co-pilot. there are now 14 co-pilots in the Southern Division of American Airways whose flying time ranges from 400 hours to 2,500 hours. Now, regardless of how much flying time a co-pilot has had, it is necessary that all co-pilots be regarded alike by their superiors, the first pilot. Your job is to do many things which other employees do not want to do. Your immediate superior is the first pilot. His wants are your orders. He is king. You are his faithful and alert servant. You are on probation always. Your working hours are from now on, and your pay is small. Your advancement is uncertain, and there are thousands of other first pilot aspirants striving to get your job at even less money and more work. You're not employed because of your flying ability, and by your employment, you are not assured ever or having a run of your own as first pilot. The pilot with whom you now have the privilege of flying largely controls your destiny. And if you handle these many details assigned to you, many of which are unpleasant, and if you prove to be of value to him and to others, you may assume that you will have the privilege of remaining as co-pilot for him until some years to come, at which time you will have learned much from your associations and flying experiences with him. And you will have won for yourself recognition by the company and all as a gentleman, as an experienced co-pilot worthy of promotion. You're not employed to do the flying, not only because you are not considered capable, but because far better pilots, the finest in the world, have been employed for that work. And if you're permitted to take the controls at any time, you may consider this a special favor on the part of the first pilot. A co-pilot who does his work makes very little noise and listens attentively to his superiors and will in time demand and receive recognition for his service. As co-pilot, there is something which really is worth working for and which can be attained, but first it must be earned. As long as you do your work well, conduct yourself strictly as a co-pilot, this company will recognize you really as an important department of that of the organization, and you will find many very good friends among those with whom you are working. You're going to be asked to do many personal favors for the older pilots. But always keep in mind that those same older pilots are at some time later going to be in a position to do many and greater favors for you. If you know yourself to have an excess amount of pride, swallow it. If you have personal faults, overcome them. Always make a neat and pleasant impression on your passengers and upon those with whom you work and live. Trusting that you are successful in your enterprise of becoming a good co-pilot. Sincerely yours, Jerry Marshall, Operation Manager. And don't forget to say, yes, Captain, whatever you say.
And thus were the first days of the Union.
And that was the Union.
Can you believe back in 1930, of course they only had a few pilots at that time, but a letter like that being sent out, and a letter like that being sent out today, what would happen? What do you think, George?
Well, I think if they sent out a letter like that today, probably somebody would file a grievance over it. That would be the first thing that would happen. And then somebody would make a little paper airplane out of it and open the window while you're at the gate and just fly it right out the window. And the window would be on the right side of the aircraft, of course.
There you go. And, of course, immediately there would be a lawsuit initiated by the co-pilot.
That's true. That would come under gross negligence or discrimination.
I guess the first thing that came to mind when I heard that, Neil, is I guess back in those days, the co-pilot never had to bail the captain out, you know?
No, that's right.
If he did, what did he do if the captain was doing something wrong? I mean, would he speak up or just sit there and say nothing, you know? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, remember the Asian plane that crashed last year?
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what happened. The co-pilot knew he didn't say anything.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the Asian one that crashed in San Francisco?
Yeah, it came in. What happened was is they were flying it in on Autoland, and the pilot, the captain, as they came over the fence, or came what they consider over the fence, flipped it off. And the co-pilot didn't realize it, and of course the plane went into the ground.
Yeah.
And there was an incident there where the co-pilot could have actually saved the plane, but he didn't do it because he was afraid of the captain.
Well, most recently, which we saw this past week, the captain died in flight, and the co-pilot took over the airplane. So. Fortunately, that co-pilot was well-trained, and co-pilots today on all the aircraft flying with commercial airlines are highly qualified individuals that can take over the duties easily. And a little bit of extra workload there, but they can safely land the airplane. But according to the letter we just read, or you just read, Steve, dating back then, the co-pilot was just, I don't know what the co-pilot was there for, to tell you the truth.
He was the janitor.
Well, you know, if you recall, back at Eastern, when the co-pilots, people said, well, why don't we give the co-pilot a type rating in the airplane when he goes through his initial first officer training? And Alpa said no, because if you did that, it would have a pool of ready-made scabs if there was ever a strike where the guys could move to the left seat because they had type ratings. I know at my former employer, they did do that. And when I raised that item up to the people in Alpa, they said, gee whiz, you know, we never thought of that. I thought it was great. But
well, and in the recent accidents that we've had, it would have been nice to have had the third pilot, which we've done away with now, in the cockpit.
Yep.
Isn't there an FAA reg or something that you have to alternate landings and takeoffs with the captain and the co-pilot?
I don't think so. I think
no,
that's not a regulation.
God, who's sitting in the left seat.
Yeah, you know, airlines used to tell co-pilots initially that you're training to be a captain, and of course according to your seniority you moved up the ranks and you would eventually be able to check out as captain. And so the experience that you received was at, I guess, somewhere in that letter, with the mercy of the king, the captain, referred to as the king in that letter, and the king gave you a landing or two. So fortunately, you got your experience that way. And, boy, I tell you what, flying for Eastern Airlines, and I think you'll agree, Steve, especially you and George would agree, that we shared. There were very few people that, the captains that I encountered that didn't give you a chance to learn. As a matter of fact, they encouraged you to fly the airplane and very bad conditions, not taking over the airplane, but saying, you're flying the airplane, and you go ahead and land the airplane. So, and it's a great you know, it's a great experience flying with the old Eastern captains that we flew with, at least the ones that I flew with.
Yep.
I think that, Neil, what you just outlined is probably one of the reasons that it was known throughout the industry that the Eastern pilots were the best pilots in the industry.
Oh.
And it was because of the fact that the workload was shared between the co-pilot and the captain, at the captain's discretion, of course.
Yeah. Now, moving on here.
Neil,
yeah, go ahead, George.
You know, yeah, you brought up an interesting point about the flight engineer. You know, there not being any more in the cockpit. I've often wondered if 9/11 would have taken place if there were three pilots in the cockpit. I don't believe that it would have. And yet we pay more today for security on the ground than it would cost to put the flight engineer back into the cockpit.
Yeah.
It's, to me, it's just plain, it borders on insanity.
The problem is you don't have any place to sit.
Well, you know, a little bit of history here. When if you recall, Eastern was the lead buyer of the 757. We were the lead purchaser of that airplane. And I was on the MEC at the time, and it was ALPA policy that any new aircraft had to have a full flight engineer panel with, you know, duties for the flight engineer. And, you know, we bickered back and forth with top management for a couple of years until they were ready to cut the metal. And we were invited, the MEC was invited, and we went up to Seattle. There was a full flight engineer panel on the 757. And it was, if you look in the cockpit today of the 757, you can still see where it was. And it was at the ALPA National Convention, a board of directors meeting later that year, that in order, well, I'm not going to go into the reasons for it, but that was when it was put, the crew complement issue was put up to a presidential commission, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they said it could be flown with two pilots, every airplane. But the thing that I raised at the convention was, well, who knows better than those of us who do it every day for a living how many pilots we need?
Yeah.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we can continue that discussion in another show. We've got to move on here, and I've got an Operations Department Service Bulletin number 26, October 15th, 1931, from Eastern Air Transport Incorporated, a division of North American Aviation. And in that bulletin, it says, and it's stated, baggage responsibility of is the subject. On ships carrying co-pilots, the co-pilot will be held responsible for the checking of all baggage on and off the planes. The backup form EAT number 27 will be used temporarily. On ships not carrying co-pilots, the pilot will check the passenger's baggage on and off and make a report on the backup form EAT number 27. They will also inquire prior to the time the ship leaves if a passenger has all his baggage and has it properly tagged. Signed, C.H. Dolan, Operations Manager, Eastern Air Transport. Another bulletin, I think, is kind of interesting, and it's dated October 15, 1931. And it says, pilot expenses. Due to misunderstanding regarding pilots' expenses while away from their home, the company in the very near future is engaging hotel rooms at various stops. And on and after a certain date, at which time the interested pilots will be notified, their expense advance will be discontinued. This is not being done to work a hardship on the pilots, but it is a measure of economy on the part of the company. Your corporation is urgently requested in seeing that these rooms are maintained in first-class conditions. Any claims put in by the hotels for breakage or losses will be assessed equally among the pilots using these facilities, unless the party responsible assumes this responsibility in writing. You are expected to conduct yourselves as gentlemen at all times and be a credit to the company. So please endeavor to treat these rooms as you would your own home. Interesting bulletin. Another bulletin dated January 20th, 1932. Blind flying between Washington and Newark. There will be no blind flying in condors between Washington and Newark due to heavy traffic in this area until such time as our radio and communication system has reached a higher state of reliability. Over-the-top flying is all right with a good radio and clear fields ahead. C.H. Dolan, Operations Manager. And then Bulletin number 53, January 20th, 1932. Subject, seat belts, pilots, and co-pilots. All pilots and co-pilots will wear their seat belts at all times when flying ships. Signed, C.H. Dolan, Operations Manager. And finally, January 20th, Bulletin number 54, 1932. Subject, passenger pilots leaving and approaching fields. Passenger pilots are getting lax once again in their methods of leaving and approaching fields. We have continually warned pilots about S-ing and side-slipping and banking at 45 degrees and 90 degrees on their turns and rushing into a field and then remaining on the field for 15 minutes because they are ahead of schedule. This is lack of thought and must be corrected. Signed, C.H. Dolan, Operations Manager. Wow. Man, you know, we have had some great, great bulletins in the distant past. But don't forget, this was the early days of aviation, and they had to come up with something, folks.
You know, I was on one of those 90-degree flights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I almost lost my dinner. Yeah.
I believe the Air Force calls that a wing over.
Ladies and gentlemen, do any of our listeners remember company policies, bulletins, or memos back in those days? I have one. Let me give you that one, and then you come on in after that. I started on the ticket counter at Hartford Springfield in 1957, and we had at that time just instituted a program called it had to do with a program where if you had a suggestion to give to the company on the change or of a new procedure, we would like to know about it. Well, remember the newspaper back in those days, I think was called the Falcon.
Yeah.
And a great many of us would read that thing profusely every time it came out. Well, I know that I, on the ticket counter, when I was putting a baggage tag on a bag, the baggage tag had a little indentation on both sides, but it also had a place where you could just tear it off and it would come off easily. Well, when you were putting the baggage tag on the bag, that tag would get hung up and it would cause you undue delay. So I sent a notice into the Idea Bank and I said, do away with that little indentation on the baggage tag, and it will save us some time. Well, do you know, I made $50 on that idea, and I had only been with the company for, I guess, about 6 months, and it really impressed me. However, Chuck, you remember that there were fellows in the maintenance end, they were putting in suggestions, and a great many of them were receiving $500 and $1,000 for their suggestions.
Wow.
I wonder how many other people know about that or have other things they can contribute to this part of the program.
Well, I can tell you a story that happened to me. When I was manager of the engine shop in Miami on the RV211, the guys would put the inner cowling, they were called cooling cowlings, on the inner side of an RV211 engine, and it had a captured bolt that when you would run it out with a socket wrench, it would stay there on the cowling and not fall off. Well, unfortunately, the little clip in the back always got broke off somehow, and they would fall out, and of course you'd have to go find them. So I got with some engineers, and we designed a tool that you could put that would hold the clips, like hold the bolt, and hold it so you could put the socket wrench on it and put it inside this indentated hole inside these cowlings. And I got it all made up and machined up, and we started using them. And I got a reward for it of $50 and a first-class ticket. Nice thing is very much. Well, after Eastern had demised, maybe 2 years after, the British Airways company called me up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wanted to buy my patent for that tool. It seemed that Eastern Airlines was selling the tool to other companies because they wanted that tool the same as Eastern did. But then when the demise came along, of course, the Eastern had not put in a patent for it. And they, I don't know how they found out I was the one that designed it, but they did. I said, well, I'd sure like to do that. But I used Eastern engineers. I used Eastern mechanics down in the machine shop, and I used their material to make it. So I don't think I'm entitled to anything for it. He said, boy, it's too bad because they make thousands of them all over the world.
Oh, that's something,
wow.
Chuck.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yes, it is. But, you're right. Some of the mechanics that I know of got, I don't think they got as high as 1,000, but I remember a guy getting 500.
Wow. You know, Jill, do you have something to add as far as remembering back in the days about manuals? Oh, Jill?
I do, Neil. It was, of course, I started in 1968, so I date back fairly well, not as far as some of you guys, but I think 68's pretty good since I started at 19. And the flight attendant manual and its requirements changed dramatically over the years that I was a flight attendant. And when I started in 1968, it was a large blue three-ring binder that contained all the information needed to be a stewardess, and it was called an in-flight service manual. Not only did we use it for on the airplane, but this was our book that we used in training. It contained safety procedures on all of Eastern Airlines aircraft, and it also included service procedures. At this point, only the senior stewardesses or flight attendant had to carry the manual with them. By the 70s, the manual had changed to represent the changes within the airline. The size of the manual had shrunk in size from the standard paper size, which is an 8.5 by 11, to a smaller 5.5 by 8.5 size. This was easier to carry, and over the years, it was a variety of different colors. When this smaller size came out, it was still considered an in-flight service manual. And I believe in about the mid or early 70s, and I'm not sure, quite sure of the year, all flight attendants were then required to carry their manuals. It had to be current in updates, and we had periodic checks to make sure that this was completed. Not long after this time, all in-flight service information, which is procedures on serving passengers, was removed from the manual, and it became the Flight Attendant Safety Manual. The most significant use of the Flight Attendant Manual, and Steve, I know you're going to recognize this date, was on May 5th, 1983, on board Flight 856. You got it.
Wow.
You know where I'm going with it, don't you?
Oh, yes. The air is contaminated in this office right now.
aboard Flight 855, a Nassau to Miami flight on the Lockheed 1011. The flight attendants did indeed pull out their manuals to help instruct their able-bodied persons where to place themselves in the slide raft combination upon completion of a water landing. After a safe landing completed by the pilots back into Miami, passengers recalled and reported to the news media how the flight attendants had used their manuals. Instead of praising the cabin crew, they found fault in them by using their manuals, which sabotaged the integrity of the professionalism of the cabin crew. The flight attendants on board Flight 855 used every means of information available in the amount of time they had to prepare the cabin for an emergency landing, just the way we were trained. As in the words of one of the flight attendants on board 855 that day, it was a Mr. Toad's wild ride.
Wow.
That's not fair.
It's not fair?
Oh, I'm...
I have some more about the unusual happenings in the early days, and I'm talking about in the area of 1957 to 1968. In 1958, I was at Floyd Hall, I believe it was in 58 or 59. It was shortly after that. Floyd Hall came into the company. And I was, Arthur D. Lewis was a general manager at that time. And I was asked as director of customer relations if there were any suggestions that I could make to the board. And I said, yes. I said, I understand that in the southern states, Miami in particular, that there were signs over the restrooms. Blacks only in this restroom, whites only in this restroom. He said, would you go down and take pictures of these things for me? Floyd Hall did. I went down and I took the pictures and I brought them back. And those signs were immediately taken down. There was one restroom for one man and one restroom for one lady. Get rid of this blacks only type thing. And I could not believe I felt very good that I had a part in that overall program.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for that.
I'd like to make a comment about that, Jill, and you, Steve, because you were the check captain on that Flight 855. But the comments, and I think you were going to comment, Steve, about that. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, as Jill referred to it.
Yes, I'm telling you that the crew, the cabin crew, did such an outstanding job. They were just great, and they didn't know how serious the incident was until the end of the flight, and they just did a superb job, Thank you for that. I didn't mean to say that's,
oh, that's
not
okay.
Fair. It just,
that's okay. It was just at the time, you know, as a flight attendant, we all knew that they did everything that they could possibly do. We had been trained. We knew what we had to do. They had time to be able to pull out their manuals. And that was a gift, to be able to show people where they need to be placed in the slide, the raft. And so that they knew where to go. They knew what they needed to do. And it was commendable. And the news media just tore into them. And we did, as a flight attendant, and I was working like crazy, we all knew that they had done the best job, and yet we kept our mouths shut because we knew that, you know, the NSTB had to meet and go through everything. And it was like, hey, they needed to be honored. And it was, you know, it was a tough situation all over, but considering the fact, and this is, and I know why this flight attendant said Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, is that we were the official airline of Disney World. And,
right.
And of course, the joke was, we're the official Mickey Mouse airline. So it
yeah.
was Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Wow.
You know, this is something I have not maybe shared with a lot of people, but the fear in the back of my mind during this whole incident was that I'm going to have to get out and help people in the water get into our lifeboats. And I don't swim very good. And
oh, wow.
And that was a real fear in the back of my mind.
Jay, I have a question for you. You mentioned in 1968 you were age 19 when you became affiliated with Eastern. And here we are today, which tells me that you're in the area, I'll just say in the area of 60, and it's so good to hear your experiences. And I had so many of those in the early days, in the days of propellers. And, of course, the young people today are not aware. They don't know anything about what we went through in the days of propellers. But, of course, the Electra came in. And then, of course, the Whisper Jet, the 727, and then from there on. But it is... it's fantastic to hear you, and I appreciate your being with us.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that nice compliment. You have to understand, my dad worked on reciprocating engines with General Motors. So when you crank up the R2800, I giggle and thank you. I giggle and laugh every time.
Okay.
Because if he were still with us, he'd be giggling too.
You know,
I have another thing, Neil, that I forgot to mention before, and that is, of course, during Captain Eddie's days, he would have posters in every area, and it says, Captain Eddie says, Captain Eddie says this, and that and the other, and he wanted people to know that he was in charge, and please let me know if there's anything different. And I always remembered that as an employee, I received from Captain Eddie every month the little magazine called Guidepost. I bet a bunch of you also remember that as well. Guidepost. Do you remember?
Yeah. Yeah, sure do. You know, we had such a historic. I don't know what can you say about Eastern Airlines, but I want to share just a little bit of humor before we wrap up our show, and maybe we'll have a little time after I read this. But this was dated from. Well, I don't have a date for it, but at any rate, it's from Captain G.H. Prince. In Atlanta, Georgia, and I knew Pat Prince. He went by the name of Pat, P-A-T, Pat Prince. And he was a prince of a person. He was just a wonderful captain that I had the opportunity to fly with, the honor to fly with. And it was addressed to Captain Van Rollen. Captain Van Rollen was a captain that... not only was in management, he was in also the Airline Pilots Association, and he was at that time manager of operations of Eastern Airlines in Atlanta, Georgia. And Pat wrote Van Rollen, we used to refer to him as Van Rollen, "Dear Captain Rollen, on my days off, I contracted to repair a building which was severely damaged by a storm. When I got to the building, I found that the storm had knocked some bricks off the top. So I rigged up a beam with a pulley at the top of the building and hoisted up a couple of barrels of brick. When I repaired the building, there were a lot of bricks left over. I hoisted the barrels of brick back up again and secured the line at the bottom, and then went up and filled the barrel with the extra bricks. Then I went down to the bottom and cast off the line. Unfortunately, the barrel of bricks was heavier than I was, and before I knew what was happening, the barrel started down, jerking me off the ground. I decided to hang on, and halfway up, I met the barrel coming down and received a severe blow on the shoulder. I then continued up to the top, banging my head against the beam and getting my fingers jammed into the pulley. When the barrel hit the ground, it burst its bottom, allowing all the bricks to spill out. I was now heavier than the bricks, and so started down again at a high rate of speed. Halfway down, I met the barrel coming up and received several injuries on my shins. When I hit the ground, I landed on the bricks, getting several painful cuts from the sharp edges. At this point, I must have lost my presence of mind because I let go of the line. The barrel then came down, giving me another blow on the head and putting me in the hospital. I respectfully request sick leave. Signed, Pat Prince."
Oh, man.
We had guys like that, and it was people like what we've heard tonight that made up the wonderful world that we lived in for our career.
But do any of our listeners remember company policies, company bulletins or memos? Memo going back to that day, whether they're days of propellers or the early days of the jets.
I've got several people on the line now. When I say several, my board is completely lit up. And if any of you folks would like to make a comment, your line is open. I've opened all the lines for any... thing you want to share with us, please do so at this time.
Do they have to hit number one on the cell phone?
No,
Michael?
Not necessary. I've opened all the lines.
Great.
Well,
I'd like to bring some up-to-date stuff. I have some bulletins maybe I could bring into conversation.
Hey, Chuck, hold that just a minute. There was someone else ahead of you, Chuck. You go ahead? Yeah, who's that?
This is Vito, Neil.
Hey,
Vito.
Yeah, how are you? Okay, I've been listening quietly. But I just want to let you know, as of this Saturday, I've been invited to participate in the honor trip to Washington by the veterans. So I thought it was a great honor to be. And they're going to be using an Eastern airplane out of Fort Lauderdale.
The honor flight, great.
Yeah, I just wanted you to know that. So,
I heard that last year, Vito.
I would feel very honored to be invited. So I thought it was great news to let you know that.
Yeah, and are you going on that flight, Vito?
Yes, I am. I've been invited on it, yes.
And because you are World War II?
Yes, I'm a World War II veteran, right? I'm
veteran, sure, absolutely. And great that you made that announcement, and also great that we have folks like you that served in World War II, the great generation. And
I'm happy over the fact that they're using an Eastern 737 also, so that's another nice thing. We'll be going out of Lauderdale, and we'll be back at 8 p.m. on Saturday with a nice celebration on Saturday evening at the airport. So,
wow,
great.
A 727?
Vito, apparently Eastern is doing a lot of things now since they've got their 121 and they're doing a lot of charters, and they've signed up a lot of sports teams.
The Florida Panthers have their own airplane now, too. Mr. Viola is one of our great sponsors and one of our great stockholders. So he's got his own airplane for his team. So he's using an Eastern airplane for traveling.
Very good.
Excellent. Very good. Vito, do you suppose we'll hear a lot of this information from Ed Weigel when we have our reunion October 23rd and 24th?
Oh, he's going to be there. He's going to be one of the speakers, yes.
Okay, along with yourself and some other folks.
Quite a few people there for the whole celebration, will we?
Matter of fact,
I'll be selling my book, The Wings of Man. We'll be selling that, a bunch of other Eastern paraphernalia for shirts and hats and everything else. So
that's great. That's great.
A great crowd that those 2 days. So
we're gonna have a good time, folks.
Yes, sir.
That just reminds me that you should remember that October 23rd, 24th, 25th. It's not too late to join in the fun that we're going to have in Fort Lauderdale at the Marriott Renaissance. And
Neil, is there a website or where people could log on to and take a look at the series of events of those 3 days?
Yeah,
Cecile's got all that. Cecile,
are you with us?
Put it all out. Yeah,
Cecile,
it's on the website also. Yeah, it's on the radio website, isn't it? Not Neil. You've got the events there on the EAL radio website. Today we had some people, and they're afraid that they might be a little bit too late, but they gave me their meal. They want steak or chicken. They want chicken and their name tag. So if you're not too late. We're collecting checks the day of the event. If you think you're not going to have enough time to send, it's $100 for 2 days, and we're going to have plenty of entertainment. We added another entertainment for Friday night, which we'll surprise you with. We have a singer, and then Saturday night, Ed Weigel will be speaking with a dinner and bring us up to date with everything. And we're going to have lots of fun, and Vito will be there with Roland Moore signing the books Wings of Man, as Neil will with Wings of Many, and memorabilia will be sold. And just come one, come all. And again, it's not too late. Go on the EAL radio show, or you can call me at 954-415-1408. That's 954-415-1408, and I'll shoot you the package that has all the agenda. Back to you, Neil.
Yeah, folks, this is something, especially if you live in Southeast Florida or over on the West Coast, Southwest Florida. It's not too far across the state to attend a wonderful reunion and celebration, and that's why we call it the Pioneers, because we are the pioneers. We, the former employees of Eastern Airlines, we're the pioneers, and we're joining with the new people of the new Eastern Airlines, and we're going to celebrate. And we're going to have a lot of fun celebrating, and we're going to get a lot of information from the new Eastern Airlines as to how they will continue what we have put in place over the many, many years in the history of Eastern Airlines. So please call Cecile. Go to our website, EALradioshow.com, and email us however. But please join in our celebration of the new Eastern Airlines flying, and we'll learn a lot more. There's going to be so much entertainment there. There'll be, like Vito said, there'll be book signings. I have a book out. The radio show has a book out. And George Jen, who's one of our hosts, been on tonight. George Jen has written a very, very popular book that is being very well received. He'll be there with his book and books that he will sell and he will sign. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Neil.
Tell me the name of the book and all that you need that I need to know about your book.
Well, which one are you speaking of?
Well, that's right. You've got two: Flying Too Close to the Sun and Final Destination.
Right. Final Destination Disaster. That's the book about nonfiction book about Eastern, the memoir. And Flying Too Close to the Sun was my first novel that was published a couple of years ago. I'll have some copies of both with me.
Very good. And we'll have a special place for George, myself, Vito, Roland Moore about their book. And golly, Pete, if any of you guys have written a book about Eastern, we'd be happy to share a space at our reunion for you to introduce that book and sell that book at our show. It's open to all, and we hope you'll be there. So please notify us as soon as possible whether you want chicken or steak at the reunion banquet dinner. And you're going to really appreciate the fact that for only $100, you're going to be well entertained for 2 days. So I'm excited about it.
Well, I wonder if any of our hosts ever want to bring anything to our attention at this time.
Well, Cecile said that there was another entertainer for Friday night. I hope it's Gloria Estefan. That would be great. You know, she lives down there in Miami.
You're funny.
Beautiful.
Price went just went up to $500 a piece.
Oh, okay.
Now we're going to surprise you. You'll love it. I'll tell you that much. Okay.
Okay.
Cecile, do you have anything else to add to the program about the coming reunion?
No. Just we have some people that are non-Eastern Airlines people coming also. So don't think it's just Eastern Airlines people. Go on the website, EALradioshow.com. You get all the info. Or call me at 954-415-1408, and I'll send you all the info. I can guarantee you you're going to have lots of fun. It is going to be videoed, so we'll see if we can share the fun. Mike Zell has donated his time as photographer, so we will have some pictures, and we'll be able to share.
And Cecile, along with that, we'll be doing interviews of those that are there, because this is historical, Eastern Airlines history. And we've got some historical people with Eastern that will be at the reunion. And I won't tell you who, but these are people of Eastern's history. So be there, and we'd like to interview you and what your memories are so that we can put it on a future show. We'd love to have you to talk into our microphones, and that way we'll have you on one of our radio shows in the future.
Neil, I guess maybe I am part of that history, and I'll wait to hear from you later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Well, we've got the music, Jim Hart.
Yes, I hear that. Holy Sunoco. Wow. Jolly Wheelers. What a great show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Producer, another outstanding show thanks to you. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we all work. We feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, listeners, guests, and hosts. We hope you'll listen again next week when our episode number 237 departs the gate on time at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, we all say to all of you, good night, Eastern family.
Good night.
Someone must come.